Good morning, everyone. It's really great to see you all. And I'm Janet Salisbury, and it's exciting to be here for day two of our National Congress of Women series. We've had one or two little glitches with our computers here at the Australian Centre for Christianity and Culture, so I hope you can all see me. Maybe just a few thumbs up around the gallery would be good. Excellent. Many thanks to Johanna McBride, Sally Blake, and a chorus of women for that beautiful video, which profoundly captures our theme today, which is weaving. How can we work together across difference to restore climate balance? Not long after I joined a chorus of women in 2006, Johanna introduced me to the African concept of Ubuntu and her song. This simple idea of our interconnected and shared humanity changed me and put me on a path that has ultimately led us all here today. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we go on. We're on a Zoom call, not a webinar, so please keep your microphones on mute. We're recording, but the video will show speaker view, which means it's unlikely that you'll be seen. But if you do have a privacy concern, turn off your video. Otherwise, please keep your video on, as it is great to feel connected. I would like to acknowledge that we are meeting on the lands of First Peoples, whose sovereignty has never been ceded. I pay my deep and heartfelt respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging. Please write in the chat the country where you are from and whatever message of introduction you'd like to share. Here in Canberra, I am on Ngambri Ngunnawal land, and we are expecting Dr. Matilda House to come and give us a welcome for country. Now, she's actually not here at the moment, and we've had terrible traffic problems in Canberra this morning. So when she does arrive, we'll introduce her to do her welcome. Just a little bit more housekeeping. Please use the chat freely and often. We'll save it and send it to you afterwards. So don't worry, you're not going to lose all those precious things. One of the best things about our day one event was the chat, all 40 pages of it. It captured the energy and inspiration in the room that day, and we used it as the basis to plan today and our other ongoing activities. We hope that we will gather further information and insights from you all today. Also note that since last November, we have set up a members intranet called WCC Connect for ongoing discussion and comment, and we'll try and put a link in the chat. Please join up. Now, and if you're on social media, please post, tweet, et cetera, during the day. Use the hashtag Women Rising, all one word, hashtag National Congress of Women, all one word, hashtag Women's Climate Congress, all one word, and hashtag Collaborative Governance, all one word. Women Rising is our most used hashtag. The Women's Climate Congress welcomes all women, cis, trans, and non-binary, who feel called to join us. We also appreciate the support of men, and if there are any men out there today on this call, you are very welcome. For the moment, we are primarily creating a space for women to discover their voice and build ideas and policy agendas that reflect our lens on the world. At the heart of the Women's Climate Congress is a vision to restore climate balance by 2030. That is to be on the path that scientists agree will keep us within a safe limit of global warming. We assert that women's voices, leadership, and full agency are needed to turn the tide of political culture from polarized discord to collaboration and cooperation, with nurture of life at the center of every government decision. Now, it's easy to say these words, but the doing of them is a huge challenge. In the face of centuries-old systems deeply imbued with conflict, winner-take-all hierarchical and patriarchal systems of governance. And current events in Ukraine and the rhetoric around Australia preparing for war with China make it hard to hold on to the hope that we can change the deeply flawed systems and relationships that create these ongoing conflicts with each other and nature. At the moment, there's no peace on earth or peace with the earth. I will say some more about this in a minute. Now, if you were one of those people who came to our first day of this National Congress last November, you will remember the video, The Singing Hill. With help from Sally Blake, Danny Pratt, and a chorus of women, Glenda Clockley told a 30-year-old story about Kurrajong, or Capitol Hill, where Australia's Parliament House stands. Auntie Matilda, who we are expecting to give us a welcome today, has told us that the hill is a women's place in First Nations culture. In the late 1980s, the prehistorian and artist Dorothy Cameron, Glenda's friend and mentor, was in a group of Canberra women who met regularly to meditate and hum around the members' fountain inside Parliament House. Their purpose was to support Senator Joe Valentine and all the honourable senators in the hopes that there would be more harmony in the building. After one of these meetings, Dorothy wrote a poem about her experience of hearing the land singing beneath the Parliament. There's a link in the chat, we hope, sometime today, to the Singing Hill video. Do go and watch it. You'll really love it. Now, we were expecting to welcome Dr. Glenda Clockley to give a presentation now called The Two Stories of the World to complete this gathering session. And she was going to speak about some stories of the First Peoples of Europe, the ancestors of many of us. Unfortunately, due to COVID sickness, Glenda is actually not able to be with us today. So I'm sorry, you're going to hear a little bit more from me. These stories from Europe can help move our present day narrative from one of conflict, winner take all, hierarchical and patriarchal approaches to one of care and respect for the living earth. We all belong to a much deeper, older heritage of care and respect for Mother Gaia and the shameful, traumatic cultural legacies of colonization. So I'm going to say a little bit of what I've learned from Glenda about the two stories of the world, and then a little bit about our theme of weaving, which Glenda has prepared for me. So the two stories reflect findings that from the earliest times in Europe, there was an earth-focused culture and organized war was unknown. Like First Nations people in Australia and Indigenous cultures elsewhere, our ancient European ancestors lived peaceably in harmony with nature. There's plenty of evidence of this in the archaeological record, particularly through the work of Lithuanian-American archaeologist Maria Imbutas, who researched the Neolithic cultures of old Europe. This was also the field of Dorothy Cameron's life work. And Dorothy worked closely with Professor Gimbutas during her career. In their culture, Mother Gaia, the living earth, was presented in myriad regenerative sacred images of women's bodies. According to Professor Gimbutas, the ancient women-centered cultures were peaceful and egalitarian. She contrasted this with the Bronze Age, when aggressive Indo-Europeans colonized old Europe, imposing domination by warrior kings and their institutions. The result is the hybrid kind of society we live in today, where traumatizing, uncaring leadership often dominates to the great detriment of balance in our planet's complex systems. Maria Gimbutas referred to the way most of us live and love and raise our families and look after each other in the community as the generative substratum. Glenda calls that the first story of the world. But overriding that is the second story of the world, the trauma story. So our job of transformation is to bring up the regenerative ways and generative ways of being to rebalance our governance and organizational systems. That's a very simple overview of the ideas. In the chat, we'll put a link to a beautiful film of the life and work of Maria Gimbutas, so you can take a look at that. Now, to say a little bit more about weaving as a metaphor for this transformation that we seek. Recently, we were shown a paper by Patricia Shields and Joseph Sauters from 2017, which introduced the term peace weaving. They were writing about constructive approaches to peacemaking and public administration that have many parallels with our hopes and goals and ways of working together in the Women's Climate Congress. Preparing for the program for today's Congress, we found peace weaving to be a lovely metaphor that opens our imagination. Like constructive peacemakers, we're thinking of climate balance as the process of nurturing life, bringing back the balance with nature that has been lost. Like weavers, we're connecting individual, diverse, maybe fragile strings to make fabric that is useful, beautiful, and both flexible and strong. Like effective climate action, peace weaving is a relational process. Especially it is a community-based and community-building process. It lifts up the first story of the world. Peace weaving builds positive relationships by working on practical problems and engaging people widely with sympathetic understanding, while recognizing that progress is measured by the welfare of the vulnerable. We've posted the Shields and Sotas paper on the chat. It's a study of the methods of Jane Addams, who won a Nobel Peace Prize for leading the 1915 International Congress of Women and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Jane Addams' life work is deep, endlessly replenishing ancestral well of inspiration for our Women's Climate Congress, as it has been for Canberra's Chorus of Women. Most of the human rights advances in the past century were set in train as Jane Addams led the 1,300 women from 12 warring and neutral countries who gathered in The Hague for the 1915 Congress. And do you know what day that Congress started on in 1915? The 28th of April. So we have a bit of an anniversary today, and we can be thinking about feeling a special connection perhaps to those women. And it was in the middle of First World War. Their effectiveness sprang from enacting the view that peace, like climate action, is the nurture of life. I invite you all to take a few moments of silence now together to reflect on this in the light of current world events, recent political rhetoric around preparing for war, and the ongoing adversarial resistance to decarbonising the economy, even in the light of IPCC code red warnings. After holding our silence for a moment, I will read a quote from Dr. Anne Polina, a traditional owner of the Muttawarra Fitzroy River in the Kimberley region of Western Australia, speaking at our Day One event last November. So, we can dream, we must dream, and we must send the dream out, and we must actualize it. We cannot afford incrementalism anymore. Mother Earth needs us. We must stop the misogyny to Mother Earth. We must stop it now. And we can rise, we will rise, we are rising. Let's dream big, because we must bring our brothers, our sons, our husbands with us. This is a beautiful nation. We are all standing together. We must rise and save our planet for young people. They are not in the future. They are living now. They have needs now. And I believe the leadership of women is rising across the planet, across the nation, and we are doing good work. Also, at our event last November, Hilary Wardhoff spoke of her project, the Everyday Climate Crisis Visual Petition, which is a visual response to the Australian government's climate change policies. Her goal is to crowdsource 1,000 images from women and non-binary photographers all over Australia and submit them to the government as a petition. Each image submitted presents climate change from a personal and culturally diverse perspective. Some of us took part in the launch of this project in Canberra a couple of months ago, and we're going to show you the ABC video, the ABC news clip of that event. And Hilary told me yesterday that she's reached her target of 1,000 images. Yay! Well done, Hilary, if you're online there somewhere, I think you are. So I'll ask Johanna to put that little video clip on.
Oh, The impact of the 2020 bushfire season left its mark on the landscape and the Australian people. For Hilary Wardhoff, it also sparks an idea.
Within the ash were millions of ladybirds. You could still see them, so they hadn't been burnt, but they were all dead. It was heartbreaking, and that's why I wanted to start this project.
Her idea was to source 1,000 photos from women and non-binary people showing the impact of climate change, with images from across the country by photographers of all ages and abilities.
I think for my own generation, there is a sense of hopelessness and despair. This is something really serious.
The aim is to eventually provide the project as a petition to Parliament on World Environment Day in June.
What I hope to do is that we have the Prime Minister at the time hold my petition up, hold our petition up, in Parliament rather than the lump of coal.
The bushfires provide a key theme of the petition.
What politicians need to realise is that privilege does not shield you from climate change. There was a huge pall of smoke over the whole of Sydney. Everybody choked in that smoke. It wasn't just, you know, left-wing hippies.
But the project also tries to look at how climate change impacts individuals.
There's been a lot of images where people have done something quite creative in response to how climate change makes them feel.
Above all, though, is a message that leaders need to act quickly.
I think that there's something very, very strong in a personal testimony. And if you have 1,000 of them sitting in front of you, you would have to be a psychopath to be able to ignore it.
The hope that if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then 1,000 pictures will lead to change. Peter Lusted, ABC News, Canberra.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Johanna. And with perfect timing, Matilda, Auntie Matilda has now arrived. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce Ngambri Ngunnawal Elder, Dr. Matilda House, who is going to welcome us to country here today. So I'll hand over. Matilda's a very well-known name to all of you, I'm sure. She's done many, many welcomes to country. She did the first ever welcome to country at Parliament House in 2008, I think it was, and she's busily going from one to another here today. I'm going to hand over to Matilda to welcome us.
Thank you very much. And talking about the welcome, I just was over there with Kevin Rudd, and he said, and I was with Tony Abbott, I'm not dropping names, I've known these guys forever. But what happened is they said, oh, why can't we come? You know? So the interest is still there. You know, politicians are still there, even though they might be in the big seats, they still have a say. They still have a way. And I said, well, you know, we still need you to keep on doing the work, and especially with climate change. I said, you know, you're leaving it up to the women of Congress. They said, well, can't we come over? And I said, no, you can't. You know, you weren't invited. So anyway, we're here today. And I want to thank you all for being here today and to let me to share a moment and that with you to say how much I care and treasure, you know, our mates here that put up with me, you know, they do, and to share knowledge and to share some of the things that needs to be done to help, you know, to look after for the sake of our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, because it's there why we got our bums on seats today to protect their future. Protecting their future is what we all have to think about, because if we don't, then they will grow up saying, well, why didn't you? What happened? And that's how kids talk these days. You know, if they want to know something and nothing happened because you were part of it but you didn't do nothing, then that's the saddest part about life. Because doing something means you were there to help, you know, care for the future. I mean, the future's coming up. We are here now, and we have to do something about what climate change and what it means. It means more than picking up a piece of paper or putting a piece of stick aside, or doing things that harm the future for our children. So we have to be very careful, and we have to maintain always the dignity of looking for the future and to make sure it's there, because we want to say we did something. We can't do everything, but let's do something. It doesn't mean much, but to me, in my lifetime, it means a lot, doing something. Because you can ever, nothing can take it away from you ever by protecting what we're all here today for and all those that are around Australia or wherever, maintaining the health and well-being of country and maintaining the health and well-being of the future for our children. And as an Aboriginal person growing up in parts of the land around here, I didn't know it at the time, but my grandparents and my great-grandfather, they did things to help and protect the future as well. That's why I'm walking around here knowing that the knowledge, what they did for me, my brothers and sisters, is still there now to pass it on to the future that's coming up. So I want to welcome you all here to the land of Ngambri Ngunnawal, and to help us all to be together, to be as one, and to care and share. And this is how climate change will happen. Nothing's going to happen overnight. But we've got to make a stand sometime, somewhere, and somehow. So let's just touch ourselves on the shoulder, and say, let's do this. Let's do this. Wakey, wakey. Let's do this for the future. So thank you and welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Matilda, for your welcome and the ongoing generosity and outreach that you and all First Nations people always extend, despite all that's happened to your people over the last 250 years. We are who we are because of each other. Ubuntu. Earlier, before you came, we showed a little movie of the African idea of Ubuntu. We are all interconnected. So thank you so much.